Well, good morning. Happy Easter to you.
Happy Easter.
Hey, thanks for doing such a great job with the cross. You know, the Easter story begins on Friday with a cross that, as Alvin alluded to, is a symbol of pain, of heartbreak, of despair, of death. And on Sunday, that symbol gets transformed to something beautiful. Thanks for participating in that transformation. And thanks to our kids did a great job. I thought they were enthusiastic, but if you thought they were enthusiastic, you should have seen the parents across the front here. Next year, we're gonna have the parents up there and the kids here. When I was 12 years old, for summer holidays, our family went to Campbell River, British Columbia. Now, we had been there before. See, our good friends lived there, and every 2 or 3 years, we made it there. But our days in Campbell River were always the highlight of my summer. Anyone from Campbell River? Anyone want to help me out and just fake it? Okay, it's a beautiful place, isn't it? We would go to Campbell River, and summers in Campbell River, we would stay at our friend's house, which was up on a hill, and the sunsets overlooking the Strait of Georgia were spectacular. And in the morning, we'd look out their kitchen window, and we would see eagles soaring. And summers in Campbell River meant that we went fishing, salmon fishing, on their boat. I once caught a 26-pound salmon in Campbell River. For a kid from the prairies, it was idyllic. You couldn't beat it. I so looked forward to spending time in Campbell River. Maybe most of all was my very good friend, Dale. Dale was a couple years older than me, but we got along really well. We would hang out. Dale's parents would give him a lot of freedom, and so I got that same freedom afforded to me that week, and we would stay up late, and we would ride bikes around. It was great. But when I was 12 years old and I went to Campbell River, something changed. As a kid with these high hopes, I arrived, and there was a wrinkle in my plans, my summer of freedom. Dale's mom announced that she had a surprise for us. She had signed us up for summer camp, and we left the next morning. And we would be at summer camp, exiled at summer camp, imprisoned at summer camp for pretty much the entire time our family was on Vancouver Island. Dale's mom ruined my life. When you're 12 years old, you think that you have a strong suspicion that parents exist to ruin your life. And that summer confirmed it. I see a 12-year-old nudging his dad right over there. You can't be serious. Summer camp. My hopes were crushed. I went to that summer camp, and I'm going to be honest with you, I hated every single minute of it. I didn't know anyone. Dale knew friends from school. I felt alone. I felt abandoned. Most of all, I was just heartbroken. All my plans, my hopes, my dreams for that week and a half were crushed. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been to Camp Disappointment? I think we all have, haven't we? I mean, if we had time, we could go around the room and you would tell me stories about a puppy that ran away. And I bet we would hear a story of a shiny new red bike that was stolen. And I bet we'd hear a story about a best friend who moved away. But this thing called heartbreak, we never really outgrow it. I wish we did, but we don't. being human, part of what it means to be human is to experience heartbreak. We can't avoid it. Are you experiencing heartbreak in any way right now? Who among us can't say that they've had their dreams crushed? That in some way, their future has been closed off. Who among us could not say that there was a promise made to me that was broken? Is there anyone here who can say that you haven't had a gaping hole left in your heart of all that could have happened but didn't? And maybe ultimate heartbreak. Who among us hasn't had to say goodbye to a loved one? Who among us hasn't lost someone close to us? It seems to me that Easter is a story that starts with heartbreak. Most people think that Easter is a vaguely comforting holiday for religious people. But I think that Easter is for anyone who has ever experienced heartbreak. Well, the story that Linda and Jamie read for us just a few minutes ago described two travelers who are walking to a place called Emmaus. They are leaving Jerusalem and walking to an out-of-the-way place. It's 7 miles away. Why are these two travelers going to Emmaus? Because Jerusalem is just way too painful to stay in. Jerusalem is the place where their friend, Jesus Christ of Nazareth, was nailed to a Roman cross. Jerusalem was the place where all of their hopes were crushed. See, they had listened to Jesus. They had followed Jesus. They had loved Jesus. They had believed the things that he had said. But when they saw him nailed to a cross, they knew that it was over. Death had had the final word. And the story writer tells us that it is Sunday, which in the Jewish world is kind of like our Monday. It's the day after the Sabbath, the day after your day off. And if you've ever lost a loved one, after the first weekend, Monday rolls around and it's time to go back to your life. You're supposed to act as if everything's normal, and you can't do that. And so these two travelers walk to a place called Emmaus. And I bet that that journey is a silent one. Because what do you say? I've journeyed with friends who are grieving, and they've told me that everyone asks them, "How are you doing?" And they just don't know what to say anymore. Imagine the worst possible thing that's happened to you, and imagine trying to talk about that 50 times a day. After a while, you just don't know what to say. You're heartbroken. And so they walk this 7 mile journey to Emmaus. And the road to Emmaus is covered with tears. Maybe these two travelers even kicked themselves for getting their hopes up. That's what we do when we're heartbroken. We say, maybe we shouldn't have followed Jesus. Maybe we should have stayed at a distance. Maybe we shouldn't have become emotionally attached to his teachings, to him. It's our own fault for getting our hopes up. And so they walk along this 7 mile road to Emmaus. Have you ever walked that road? And out of the blue, this stranger comes up to them. More on his identity in a moment. But he asks them, "Hey, what are you guys talking about? Why the sad faces?" And these two travelers say, "Have you been living under a rock? Don't you know what has been happening in Jerusalem?" And this stranger says, "Tell me." And they begin to pour out their hearts, their grief. They begin to talk about their friend, about their hopes, and they use these words, maybe the saddest and yet most realistic words in the English language. They say, "We had hoped." They talk about Jesus and they say, you know, we had hoped that he was the real deal. We had hoped that what he talked about was true. We had hoped that he actually offered us a new way to live. We had hoped that he was going to free Israel from Roman rule. We had hoped. Don't we also use that phrase? We say things like, we had hoped that job was going to get us out of financial debt. We had hoped it was going to be meaningful. But now we just feel stuck and we don't know what to do. We had hoped to get into med school, but apparently it's too competitive and I'm not smart enough. We had hoped that relationship was really going to go somewhere. There were such sparks at the beginning, but it's dead. We had hoped the marriage would survive. We had hoped that the cancer wouldn't spread. I wonder what a handful of parents in Parkland, Florida, are thinking about this Easter weekend. After a horrific high school shooting, they're probably thinking, you know, we had hoped just to see our kids graduate. That's pretty reasonable hope, isn't it? We had hoped that maybe we'd see our kids go to college. Maybe they would find love, get married, start a family. We had hoped for so much. But closer to home, this community has been walking the road to Emmaus. See, when I look out at our congregation, I see people like Shelley Ricard and her kids, Vienna and Asher, who said goodbye to James, a father, husband. James was 37 years old. And I look at Ray and Sophie, who were here at the earlier service, and they said goodbye to a wife and a mother. Sharon was 46 years old. And I look at the Gotts family, and I think of Kieran, who was just 8. We all have something that we could say we had hoped. And the Easter story does not minimize our pain or our loss. It doesn't minimize it or shrink it or take it away. Because this man from Nazareth shows up in our journey. And he shows up on the road to Emmaus in the middle of our heartbreak and grief. And he walks with us. And he says, "Tell me about your heartbreak. Tell me about it." And he listens to these travelers. He doesn't say, "Come on, snap out of it." He doesn't give them a pep talk. He walks with them in their grief. Helen Keller once said, "I'd rather walk with a friend in the dark than alone in the light." This man from Nazareth doesn't appear and say, "Ta-da, I'm here, grieve no more." That's what I would have done. Don't we long for Jesus of Nazareth to remove our pain and our grief? And instead, he listens, he walks with us, he cares for us. He enters into our grief, he journeys it with us. Somehow, he does this, and we don't recognize him. This is an interesting thing in the story, is somehow Jesus, the friend they lost, walks with them, and they don't see him. They don't recognize him. And I'm thinking, did he have a hoodie on? Was he being all ninja-type Jesus? How did they not see him? And I've been thinking about this all week. How did they not recognize him? How did they miss him? And yesterday, we were here setting up and decorating, and I went home, and my wife said, with great optimism, "Did you see the new plants that I planted in the front yard of the house?" And I said, "What? What plants?" And she said, "Are you kidding me? You didn't see any? I worked all afternoon taking out weeds and putting in these plants. You didn't see them?" Don't we miss a lot of things? Maybe the travelers were too deep in their grief. Maybe they were too busy. Sometimes the risen Jesus shows up and we miss him. Some people miss Jesus because they're convinced that God is angry at them. And when God himself shows up in their lives and he doesn't lecture them, he just walks with them, we miss him. We don't see him. Well, this story continues, and these travelers bond with this stranger from Nazareth, so much so that they say, "Come in for dinner and eat with us." And then somehow this story of heartbreak completely changes. Verse 30, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem, and there they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen." Here, this stranger from Nazareth breaks bread with two people who have broken hearts. And maybe they see the scars in his hands where the nails were put. I don't know what happened, but their eyes were opened. And suddenly, everything has changed. The risen Jesus shows up in their lives. They weren't looking for him. They weren't expecting him. They were a mess. They were heartbroken, and Jesus just shows up and changes everything. And then the Bible says, just when they recognize him, he vanishes. The Bible is weird sometimes, isn't it? What do you mean he vanished? After all that, he vanishes? Sky Jesus is hard to pin down, isn't he? Our experience of him sometimes feels elusive. We get glimpses of him. And yet the effect on the travelers was this. Weren't our hearts burning within us? There's a fire in our hearts suddenly that we can't explain. Our hearts were broken, and now our hearts are ablaze. Easter is the story of transformation, of how our hearts go from being broken to set on fire. Easter, because of Easter, our hearts can be transformed from broken hearts to burning hearts. That doesn't just happen for the travelers, that can happen for us. Because the risen Lord still shows up unexpectedly in our lives. Have you ever met the risen man from Nazareth? Because when you do, it changes things. It changes us. It changes everything. You'll still experience heartbreak. But there is a new hope, a deep hope that can't really be explained, that rests inside you. And you know that if Jesus Christ conquered death, then the world is a different place than we thought. There's a man named Phil Calloway, an author, who tells a story. He and his five-year-old son were walking through a cemetery, and his son saw that there was a hole in the ground and there was a big pile of dirt beside it. And Phil says that his son looked at that, stunned, and then looked at his dad and looked at the hole in the dirt and looked at his dad and said, "Dad, one of them got away. Somebody escaped." And at first, Phil thought it was a little disrespectful, but then he remembered his son was five. And Phil thought about it for a moment and thought, "You're right. One did get away." Death, we think, is the death has the final word, right? And yet, if Jesus was resurrected from the grave, this changes everything. This means that death doesn't have the final word. Death has the second to last word. See, when you're walking on the road to Emmaus in heartbreak, it always feels like death wins. But the good news of Easter is that death doesn't win. Death sucks. Death hurts. Death is heartbreaking. But friends, it doesn't get the final word. Life does. Jesus does. And if you follow Jesus, then not only does Jesus win, but you do too. Now, I know what some of you are thinking right now, because I would think it if I were sitting there. I would say, "Okay, wait a minute. I followed you through the heartbreak story. I get it. But you kind of lost me where you talked about the dead man who comes alive again. Because I don't know what world you live in," you might say to yourself, "but dead people just don't come alive. I'm sorry, but I don't believe in miracles." I understand that. I sympathize with that. In fact, I can't give you some kind of airtight argument that would compel you to believe today. But it seems to me that we're experiencing miracles all the time, every day. In springtime, there's this amazing transformation of this creepy, crawly bug with thousands of legs. And it crawls along and does its thing, and then suddenly, it is transformed into something beautiful. You thought puberty was a big adjustment. Now, I know there's a lot of scientific explanation. Some of you could give it and explain why. But the explanation doesn't take away from the miracle. That when you're outside and you see a butterfly, you just stop for a moment and you go, "Wow. That's beautiful." The explanation doesn't take away from the fact that it's wonderful and miraculous and mysterious. And when you look at the face of a child, the face of a baby, we have a picture of Logan Lee, one of our youngest members. I think he's 8 months today, Tim and Eileen's son. When you look at Logan, I know you can scientifically explain how a child is born. I get it. You can tell me all about the little tadpole sperm who finds the egg, and you can explain it all. I'm not going to go further with that illustration on Easter Sunday. But when you look at the face of a child, if you're lucky enough to look into the face of your own child, you just go, "Wow. It's a miracle." There's explanations, but it's just a miracle. And the face of a child just takes your breath away. We're experiencing miracles all the time. If you're a skeptic, if you're a doubter, I get it. I totally do. But consider just for a moment, what if What if it was really true? What if Jesus really was resurrected? What if Jesus really did transform people with broken hearts into people with burning hearts? One of the reasons I believe in the resurrection is because I have seen with my own eyes people's lives changed when they meet the risen Lord. And if you were to look over the last 2,000 years, there are millions of people whose lives have been transformed because this man from Nazareth showed up one day in their lives. And when that happened, they thought, this changes everything. There was a man named Paul. He hated Christians. He thought Jesus and Christians were a stain that needed to be removed from the world. And one day on the road, the risen Lord met him. His name was Paul. And the resurrection of Jesus changed everything for Paul. His heart was set on fire, and he became one of the most influential people in all of Western civilization. There was a man named John Wesley. And John Wesley used to journal. He lived in the 1700s. And John Wesley said, "My heart was cold and empty, and I was unmotivated." And one day, John Wesley got dragged to a church meeting. If you've been dragged to Easter service because somebody in your family said, "I'll buy you brunch after," hey, this is a story for you. I've been dragged places myself. I see that hand. Thank you for that. John Wesley was dragged to this meeting. And of all things, somebody got up and started reading, get this, the preface to the commentary to the book of Romans. That sounds about like the most boring thing ever. Not Romans, not the commentary to Romans, the preface to the commentary to Romans. The least heartwarming thing in the history ever written. And this person is reading this, and John is sitting there thinking, "I'm hungry, when do I get out of here?" And the risen Lord met John Wesley. And John Wesley said, "I felt my heart was strangely warmed." That God put a spark in his heart, a fire. God set his life ablaze with a sense of passion and purpose. We talk about having fire in your eyes or fire in your belly. John had fire in his heart, and he began to live this life of passion. He wanted everyone to experience the warmth of God's love. Have you ever had your heart set on fire? Because the risen Lord is here today. And he transforms broken hearts into burning hearts. Let me conclude with a story a little bit closer to home. Let me tell you about my friend Derek. Derek is a part of our East Van community, and this morning at 9:15, he was sitting right over here. And a few weeks ago, I was sitting in a coffee shop, and I was thinking about Easter message. And Derek came in, and he sat down, and we had coffee. And unplanned, he just started sharing with me his life story. And after he shared it with me, I said, "Derek, would you be willing to share that on Easter Sunday?" And a look of terror came over his face, kind of like some of the kids in the front row of the song, you know? And he very politely said, "Jade, I'd be happy for you to share it, but I don't want to share it." And so I was honored that he gave me permission and shared this story. But in 1985, our friend Derek was in a very desperate situation. He was in deep depression and despair. In 1985, Derek, living in Vancouver, realized that his wife of 7 years was leaving him along with their two preschool daughters. Derek was devastated. He understands why they left. He's very honest. "I didn't deserve them," is what Derek would say. I was not a good husband. I was not a good father. But his heart was shattered that day. And Derek describes how he purchased gifts for his daughters, birthday gifts, and they sat in his apartment because he lost all access to his daughters. And every day those gifts reminded him of that separation. And Derek sank deeper into depression and despair on his road to Emmaus. And one day Derek thought that the only solution was suicide. And he used to walk across the Canby Street Bridge, and they were doing construction on the bridge, and he noticed that the lanes narrowed and that the bikers and the vehicles kind of came together, and it seemed kind of dangerous. And so Derek studied the patterns of traffic on Canby Street Bridge, and he went and bought himself a bike. And he thought, at least if it looks like an accident, it will preserve some sense of dignity for my parents. At least if it looks like an accident, my family will receive some insurance money. And for 2 months, Derek planned his suicide. And one night, he was lying in his bed, and he heard out of the blue this voice, and he knew that it was the man from Nazareth. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was a strong impression internally. And this voice said to him, "Derek, come to me. If you're tired and broken and weary, come to me and I will give you rest." And when Derek heard that, he exploded in anger. And he said, "God, where have you been my entire life? Can't you see I'm suffering? Why would you let this happen to me? Where are you?" And in the moments afterwards, he heard a second voice, the voice of Jesus again, that said to him, "Derek, cast all your cares on me, because I care for you. Derek, I care and I love your family. I love your daughters. Derek, I love you. Cast every care of your life upon me. I will take it." And in that moment, Derek broke down. He knew it was Jesus calling to him. And he says, the voice wasn't angry, the voice wasn't mad. The voice was gentle and loving, and for the first time in his life, he sensed that God was real, calling to him. And so Derek did the only thing he knew how to do. He went to church the next Sunday, and the pastor got up and preached on two verses, Matthew 11:28. "Come to me, all of you who are weary and broken, and I'll give you rest." And the second verse the pastor preached on was, "Cast all your cares on me, because I care for you." And Derek knew in that moment that he had not been forgotten. And he did the only thing he knew how to do. He surrendered his life to Jesus Christ, and his life was changed. He went from a man who was brokenhearted, in despair, a man on the road to Emmaus, to a man set on fire, to a man whose heart burned with a new desire and passion. And Derek is very honest. He says, "Jade, my life didn't, everything didn't solve overnight. I had to rebuild trust, and that took years. But on that day, I was filled with something unique, a hope that I never had before. I'm still heartbroken sometimes. Things don't work out the way I want them to. But it's different now. I have deep inside a hope. Because Jesus lives, I have hope. I can face today. I can face tomorrow. He's given me a new hope, a new fire within." Derek spends most of his days now with the love of his life, his grandchildren. He actually babysits them most weekdays. And he shares, happily shares pictures of his grandkids, tells stories. God has transformed his life. Have you ever met the risen Jesus? Maybe today, for the first time, like those travelers, your eyes are being opened. Or maybe you feel something warm. Maybe not a blaze, but a little flicker, a little light, some new possibility. Maybe there is something to this Jesus. Maybe the resurrection means something for me. Maybe today is an invitation from Jesus to come to him, to take a step, a baby step towards him, to just open your heart up to Jesus in some way and say, Jesus, meet me on my road. Help me to recognize you. Jesus, would you take my broken heart and do something with it? Maybe turn it into a burning heart so I have a desire, a passion, a purpose for life. Do you want to ask Jesus to do that? It's as simple as praying, of just calling out to him in your own words and saying, Jesus, open my eyes. I want to see you. If this is the desire of your heart, I'm going to lead us in prayer. And I'm going to invite you to just pray along silently if this expresses the desire of your heart. So let's pray together. Jesus, meet me on the road today. Meet me on my life's journey. Today I've seen the Easter story in a new way. And I want to respond in some way. Take my broken heart and transform it. Put a fire in my life, in my heart. Fill me with your warmth, with your love, with your goodness. Make me new. Jesus, I believe that you died on the cross for me, and that now you're alive, and because you live, I have hope. Fill me with that hope today. Pray in Christ's name. Amen.